Yo. Can you hear me? You listening to
hashtag WAW. What a week.
Wow, what a week. Wow, what a world. Welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week Q&A. Normally, I'm the one with Gilles or coming up with the questions, with the guests and everything else. But if you're tuning in for the first time, at least once a month, we'll do a Q&A. Check out the DMs and the inboxes and not expose some of you that think I get to see my own inbox. I don't. Gilles or my manager, she's standing with the big dog.
I'm the one that sees the inappropriate stuff.
I kill
stuff.
Myself. But anyway, yeah, so we're here for another Q&A because we can. Also because, wow, what a week, what a month.
How are you?
We are 9 days into the month and already I'm like, geez. I'm good. I'm generally in a good place. A couple of things that I need to still sort out, get into place. And yeah, but I'm good, man. You bob and weave through everything you go through.
People are slowing down as it's officially like half of the first half of the year is done.
Yes.
You're changing gears and pushing harder.
We just started a brand new radio show. I mean, the show is a week and a half old already. So you can't take your foot off the gas or the petrol when you're building something new. I mean, there's bookings for gigs that I can't take over the next 3 months. Simply because I firmly believe if you're building a brand new radio show, then consistency. You have to hammer at it every single day so that people understand the rhythm that they need to either acclimatize to or get used to. So, yeah.
Do you make the sacrifice, speaking about gigs, because I know there's international gigs that you've declined, which is big money, like a lot of money.
In fact, my entire career, I have sacrificed touring and playing overseas for radio. And a part of me sometimes looks back and regrets it. So when I was at Five, I was turning down gigs left, right, and center. Mm. Also, it was at a time where technology wouldn't allow for me to do the show from there. Nowadays, you've got clean feed. I mean, you take your laptop, you take a mic, and you can do a radio show. And if, you know, unless you tell the listeners that you're in another room, often they can't even tell the difference. But back then, technology did not allow for that. If you're going to do an outside broadcast, it was more involved. You might need an engineer. You might need to get, you know, a whole Comrex device or book a phone line. So, you know, with technology now, life will be easier.
So you're going to take the international gigs or not? In the next few months?
For the next 6 months, we're building a radio show. So need to focus on building a radio show, building rapport with the team. For me, team rapport is very important. You can't be a team, but sound disjointed, sound like you don't know each other, sound like you... It's like being in a jazz band. We might not have practiced, but we're jamming because the energies align. And for me, having a team that aligns is very important. It's only been a week, but I think we are getting to a gelling state of things, and that's all I want. Yeah.
Without getting emotional... we lost Kuvesh.
Yes, Kuvesh was our researcher and producer. We lost Kuvesh 2 years ago.
Yeah, he was more to you. And I thought about it when you went to Kaya and I was like, Kuvesh would have been someone you would have...
Yes, I have never gone to a radio station on not taking Kuvesh with me. So even if we had an official show producer and researcher, I would still pay Kuvesh to do additional work and additional prep. So I'd often sit with two prep sheets, the one that the station paid for and then the one that I paid for. And often I'd use the one I paid for because Kuvesh got me. Kuvesh understood me. And what I loved about our relationship with Kuvesh is at Five, at least I was officially hired. I convinced the station that I need this dude.
Mm.
And he sat in the production booth, not only taking calls, but he also did half of the prep. And he also had the talkback switch on most of the time. So often he'd throw nuggets and gems in my ear while I'm on air. So sometimes you might think it's a me thought, but it was him chirping in my ear and me running with it. That's the kind of relationship we had. And the fact that we lost him 2 years ago, for me, it was weird starting a new radio gig without him. But I know he would have loved what we're building right now. Yeah, he would have loved what we're building, because we're building. For those of you that are still trying to get used to us on Kaya, stick around and you see what we're building, or it's also okay. I think Madiba and a whole bunch of other people died for you to have choices and options. And I'm a big advocate. Exercise your choices, man. It's okay not to like our show. There are things I don't like. I don't eat broccoli. You know what I mean?
But
I'm not going to treat broccoli and say I don't eat you. I want to just enjoy cauliflower instead. So yeah, man. But I think to the people that have hit the ground running with us, some of whom have been in our lives and our careers for the last 25 years, some I personally know stopped listening to radio a very long time ago. They're back listening to radio. They're tweeting about it. They're interacting with the show. And that's all I want, dude. Yeah.
To end off about Kuvesh, for those who don't know who he is, who he was, who is he?
So Kuvesh was a kid that I met at Boston City Campus at the media school in 1995. So when we arrived at Boston Media House in Orange Grove, obviously we're all new. So a whole bunch of kids. There is the black kids. There was us, the black kids. Majority of whom were from Kokasi or the township. Then there's the white kids. There was a bunch of Jewish kids, a couple of Indian kids. And myself and Kuvesh gelled because as much as we were about black culture, but we were also geeky about other culture. So we both loved Beavis and Butthead. So we'd sometimes just carry on like Beavis and Butthead. You're an idiot. So there were days, whenever it's just the two of us, we'd talk like Beavis and Butthead. So we loved that. We loved Nirvana. We loved the Cranberries. We loved so much of the same things that we became very good friends at Boston. So I would sometimes hang out with the black kids. Sometimes I'd hang out with Kuvesh and the Jewish kids, because Jewish kids, chicks loved him. Like all the Jewish girls loved Kuvesh. Also because Kuvesh was the guy that you could friend zone because you know he's not trying to get in your pants. You know what I mean?
He was a gentleman.
He was a gentle guy, man. He was the nicest guy ever. And a part of me always says to God, why are you always taking the gentle ones? I know maybe you need a bit of gentle energy in heaven, but you have enough, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was part of my, having to deal with losing Kuvesh the way that we did. The fact that I think the earth is worse off without his energy. Kuvesh is the only guy I know that wished every single person in his phone book happy birthday. And he never forgot a birthday. All of my kids, the morning, in fact, at midnight, I'll get a message. Please wish little Tato a happy birthday in the morning when he wakes up. Wish Lifika happy birthday. Wish Wande happy birthday. Kuvesh was that guy.
He'd remind you.
He'd remind you of your own kids' birthdays. But also, he was an information junkie. So that's why I had him as part of my research team whenever I was on radio, because I knew he would find stuff no one else could. I'll give you another example. We did Bikers for Mandela Day probably about 12, 13 years ago. And we were riding, I can't remember which town we were riding from to Kunu for Mandela Day. The Clintons were in town. So Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton.
I remember seeing that picture.
No, Hillary wasn't there. It was.
No, it was Bill there.
It was Bill and their daughter. What's her name again? I can't remember her name. But anyway, because we planted a tree together, actually, with her. And before we get on our bikes to ride into Kunu, Zelda Lekhranji, Madiba's personal assistant, says to me, when we land there, there's a tree planting with the Clintons, and there'll be a little ceremony, and you're the MC.
While you're on a bike.
I'm about to get on the bike. What did I do? I sent a text to Kuvesh. Kuvesh, this is the situation. Was Clinton number 42? I can't remember what number he was. But listen, Kuvesh, number 42 is in town. And I'm going to be doing an event. I'm going to be introducing him. And this is what's going to be happening. Work your magic. And I got on my bike. When I landed, got off my bike, he had a opening remarks, a little joke about the U.S. presidency, what needs to happen, and the program. He did all of that in the space of like an hour and a half. And I just read it as it was because he was the kind of guy.
Before ChatGPT.
So that is the kind of person I've lost. Before ChatGPT, there was Kuvesh. So yeah, man, it's weird being on radio and he's not there.
Thanks for introducing him to me.
You're welcome.
It was a good one.
Yeah. In fact, another thing about Kuvesh that I actually miss is the fact that he was a thoughtful gifter. So he listened all the time. So for instance, one of the girls at Amp Studios, it was her birthday. And he'd overheard her a couple of months prior talking about feeling unsafe in an Uber. And what did Kuvesh do on her birthday? He bought her a little bottle of mace.
He also got me one.
And it's like, here's a pepper spray. Happy birthday. Here's a pepper spray. Carry it with you all the time. This is how it works. If ever you feel unsafe or you feel like you're in danger, this is what you use. He got another friend of ours a knife because she felt unsafe. So he got her a girl-friendly knife that's easy to deploy and to operate. So that, he was a thoughtful gifter. When I moved into my place, he got me like a vegetable cutter I'd never seen in my life. It's like, this will help you if you need to dice onions and this and that. So he was that guy, man, very thoughtful. And one thing I think we can all learn from a Kuvesh is that be so thoughtful about the people around you that you know what they want, what they don't want, what makes them tick, and even their fears. So that if you need to gift them or have conversations with them, then you're on the same level all the time because you were listening. Just pay attention.
I think what I loved about him is that he also lived in the moment.
Yes.
Besides the fact that he would intentionally say goodbye to you.
To every single person.
Because you don't know what tomorrow holds. It's that in the moment that he was with you.
Yes.
You had his undivided attention.
Yes.
And he fueled you, man. Yes. He really, really fueled you.
I mean, we worked with so many interns at Amp Studios downtown Johannesburg that he'd still take his time to say goodbye to every single person. And he'd look at you in your eye and say goodbye. Till we meet again.
And he knew everyone's names.
Yeah. So be thoughtful, man. Be the guy. Pay attention. Be in the moment. I think we all need people like that in our lives. Or be that person to other people.
What moment did you have this week that you think Kuvesh would have been proud of?
I think with the radio show that we are building. Because one thing with the radio is, depending on the radio station you work at, you're working with a different software and a different team. So the fact that we literally jumped into the deep end with a brand new team, brand new radio software and everything else, and we must still deliver content. And we must still sharpen everything and hone everything and still play the ads on time, traffic on time, and make sure management are happy. So for me, it's that, man. It's been an epic week. I'm proud of the fact that I'm averaging 5 hours of sleep a night. It's the best I've done in a year.
I was going to say, that's not enough.
It's not enough.
You haven't been sleeping anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, man, it's yeah, I'm loving what I'm doing.
What's the one thing that happened this week that you can't believe actually happened?
The one thing that happened this week that I can't believe happened. It's a difficult question because nothing shocks me. Yeah, nothing shocks me, man. I don't think there's anything that I can't believe happened because it's very difficult to shock me. It's very difficult to surprise me. Nothing says to me, hi, Abel.
What happened to you that made you this person where nothing shocks you?
That I'm fully awake to human nature and human beings. And that human beings are part of the animal kingdom. That animals will do what animals do. We've been socialized into being the beings that we are. But we're animals. We are self-serving and we are selfish. And if it's not about me, why should it be about you? And if I need to take you out so it can be about me, I will do that. So I've understood human nature from day one. That you'll be let down by people, man. It's not even a trauma response. It's a full understanding of human beings. But it also helps you manage expectations. I expect nothing from everyone. So everything is a pleasant surprise. I have zero expectations of people. Because we're animals. We're part of the animal kingdom.
Not even good things?
It's all a bonus if I don't expect it from you. You see?
That hurts.
No, and it's not even in a malicious way or a horrible way or that I expect nothing from people, including people that I love. But I've just learned that for my own peace and peace of mind, the less you expect, the more surprises you get. And the nicer life becomes, actually.
I guess the good and the bad of it.
The good and the bad of it, man. The good and the bad of it. So, yeah, nothing human beings do surprises me, actually.
Which human tested your patience this week? You don't have to name them, unless...
No, we'll name them if they did. Which human tested my patience this week? None. This week. Because on the flip side of everything else, I'm still a very patient person. Often more patient than is good for me. I give people more grace than I ought to. I tolerate more bullshit than I should. So it's generally been a dope week. It's generally been a dope week. So yeah, nobody tested my patience this week.
Financially, was it a good week as well?
If I was a business, this week was a bad week. Because I mean, we work in an economy, in an industry where, I mean, if we're gigging, it's either you're gigging or you're not. If you're gigging, you're making money. If you're not gigging, you're not making money. So, had a gig Thursday night at work, with a bunch of marketers, like a whole bunch of CMOs, got together at Kaya House and we got to entertain them. So that was dope. So, yeah. So business wise, it's been a bad week. So, yeah.
I want to ask you, because we're talking about business now.
Yep.
There's a lot of negative PR around the Durban July.
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, it's open information now. A lot of marquees had to cut down. Yeah. As a DJ, how did it affect you? And how would you plan for next year if you are planning for next year?
So I think I know of about 6 marquees that chose not to do the Durban July. Because the initial outlay alone is a lot of money. Just to book the space, and then you put up the infrastructure, the sound, everything else. And you haven't even booked talent yet. And maybe it's an opportunity for other people to look at or reimagine a marquee for your clients.
Yeah.
That maybe making it as talent heavy as some become is not necessarily what you want. You know, I'm certain that people who want to go to the horses and hang out and have fun, but it's not groove.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So maybe there's an opportunity for someone to look at those people that are not looking for, just give us a band to do jazz standards in the background and we can hang out with our clients and have fun. It doesn't always have to be groove. And obviously this is me taking food out of my own mouth, but this is me also saying to people who are in entertainment, there's low-hanging fruit there.
But there's one in Cape Town, what's it? Elizabeth passed away, excuse me. King's Plate, it's called King's Plate now.
Yes.
It's more horses and people.
But there's a party after that though. It's a one party after party.
But set up. From 11 o'clock till 6 p.m.
It's about the horses.
It's about the horses.
Mm, 100%.
Like everyone's got a view of the race. Mm. The music that's been played is background music and stuff. So maybe we need something like that in Durban.
Perhaps. But I think between the economy and the downturn and the fact that a lot of people can't afford to generally splash at the marquees, don't forget that your average person is going there for the horses and not necessarily the after parties. So they want to go and have a damn good time. I mean, the negative feedback you're getting is about the after parties, about the parties.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Not saying the horses didn't run nicely. You know what I mean? If anyone's complaining about the horses, it's because your horse came last or that your horse is still running and it's a week late.
It is.
You know what I mean? So I think we also need to... reimagine how we rate the Durban July. Are you a punter or are you a party animal? Because if you're looking at it from entertainment perspective, then yeah, maybe some marquees didn't show up, others didn't make the money they normally do. But I think the ones that have stayed the course and have offered people value for money, for instance, we did Chase.
Yeah.
Chase is always incredible. We also did
Opulence.
Opulence is always dope. And I was happy to do Opulence at 6 p.m. versus 3 p.m. Because normally I'm there. I'm normally the first guy to play at Opulence.
Open it.
Mm. So we did, what, 3 marquees as opposed to 4 or 5 or 6 like we normally do.
Yeah.
But there are people who are still not getting booked. So I'll never complain about the number of gigs that I get because I understand that we're in an economy where majority of DJs in this country are not making a cent from their talent. Majority. And majority of producers making incredible music are not getting bookings either.
What advice would you have for those people? Because there's a lot of them and then a lot of them DM. And the biggest question that I never know how to even answer or what to say is people saying to you, like, I'm putting in the hours. I've got my 10,000 hours. I'm making music. They send their music. Their music is incredible. But they're just not making money.
Libs of the Villain the other day posted about how as a DJ, not only do you stay the course, but give 150,000,000% every single time that you're behind the decks because you don't know who's watching. You don't know who's going to see what you're doing. You don't know who's going to experience your set. I mean, Lebs are played at Anywhere in Your City in Durban on Sunday.
Mm.
And Lebs of the Villain has always given 150%. I mean, he gives all of himself to his sets. So those that do experience him will understand that, yeah, there's that guy, man. If I do an event, maybe that's the guy I need to book. I mean, that's about the only advice that I can give you. Apart from working the socials and coming up with content as often as you possibly can, maybe even doing mixes for YouTube or for social media, you need to be out there. You need to put yourself out there. If you're doing mixtapes, do your mixtapes and get them out there. I'm not trying to encourage bootlegging people's stuff or pirating people's stuff, but do whatever you need to do that is legal to get your name out there. But even at that level, there's no guarantee. The fact that there's household names whose music is on top 40 radio, not gigging, should tell you the kind of industry we're in right now. But you stay the course, man. I mean, we do this more often than not for the culture and for the love.
So with something like that, what do you then say to a person? Because am I putting my whole focus on my dream and passion so that I can build and make money off it?
Yes.
Or do I have another job, but that takes away from the hours that I put into my dream?
The thing is, even like the reality right now, like I'm saying, is that a lot of people have gone back to the 9-to-5s. 10 years ago, there were more career DJs than there'll probably ever be for a very, very long time. Because of the nature of the game and the fact that there's new talent out there, people have options, there are new genres. I mean, in the last 10 years alone, South Africa's produced 2 new genres. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. From Amapiano, now we have 3-step. Maska and Dilone is part of the mainstream now. So when I'm booking, do I book a DJ or do I book one of the young Maskandi artists that have come up? And for me, it's a beautiful thing because these are South African genres that South Africans are supporting. Which other nation can say we've re-mainstreamed one genre and we've built 2 new genres that have gone global? Which other nation can tell you that?
Nigeria. They're claiming Amapiano.
No, but you know, but we know the truth about Amapiano, that Amapiano is South African through and through. Yes, you can take the elements and have fun with the elements.
Mm.
But if you look at even just the output, there's no one who can touch this country. I mean, yes, even in Europe, they're starting to, I want to use the word appropriate Amapiano, because I don't know which other word to use, but they're showing it love because it's a sound that has captured the imagination of the planet.
There's no other nation
at a music production level. There's no other nation operating at this level. The only thing is, how do we turn that into money, into bookings, into opportunities for these kids?
So people like kind of what, Major League, right?
Yes.
Because they're playing, what's a club in Ibiza?
Oh, they were at Chinua.
Yeah, yeah, at Chinua. Right. When I went to Chinua in 2024, Pablo.
Floss. Carry on.
Excuse me. It was work. Thank you very much. DJ Pablo, I think he's from Brazil.
Yeah.
He was playing South African music.
Yes.
So to see like a 360 of the Twins being there now, and their sound is different to Temba, well, Euphonic as we know him at home, and Shimza and Black Coffee.
Yeah.
So do you think that in the near future, the like Mapiano and our sound is what we need to go out with as opposed to trying to play what people internationally know?
I think every DJ must find a place in the sun, find your sound and go with the sound. But unfortunately, for instance, in the overseas market, especially in Europe and the US, DJs are more often than not, especially if you're building from scratch, are hired based on what are you known for.
Yeah.
So if you're an open format DJ and your social media is very open format, your SoundCloud is very open format, in a lot of markets, you're seen as a wedding DJ or a corporate gig DJ. But if you're known for a certain sound, you'll get booked for that sound. I mean, you look at what Lag has been doing with Tom over the last, 5 to 10 years.
Mm.
He's been in his own lane, one man. And it's only now that you're starting to see it actually rear its head on the global scene. I met a young lady from London at Anywhere in Your City. And she was telling me that everywhere she goes in London, all she's hearing is Afro House. And a lot of it, if not majority of it, is from this country. This country. I mean, with the doors, Nati or Black Coffee is opening at High Ibiza alone. I don't think there's been as much South African music played in clubs on this planet over the past 5 years than since the existence of house music. The past 5 years alone, you're hearing more South African dance music in clubs than in the history of dance music. Come on, guys.
But
come
how
on.
Do we make money off it? It
goes back to what I'm saying. Now, the big question now becomes, how do you monetize that? Again, in Europe, the promoter is actually a big deal. The promoter is the tastemaker. The promoter is the guy that decides that for this event, we're going to put this guy on this year. We're going to give this one an opportunity to show the world what he's made of. So it's very important to also build bridges with promoters, not just with club owners. But the promoters are the guys that are making that call that, you know what, we want Shimza on Coachella back-to-back with Afrojack.
On an international level, that makes sense.
Yes.
But also,
unfortunately, the only way to fast-track your trajectory is if you come up with a global hit. I mean, you look at Vanco and what his song did in one summer in the Northern Hemisphere last year. That almost guarantees you bookings in the next summer. But you also need to follow it up with another hit, or at least more music. Doesn't have to be a massive hit. But don't stop producing. Don't stop making music. Don't stop releasing music. Because of what Vanco did, Kayalla Habibi, because he's got a discography, his new fans that are hearing Yalla Habibi and his name for the first time now go back. It becomes a rabbit hole of, what else does this kid do? That's why I always say, release your music, have catalog, because one day someone will hear one song and then hear your entire catalog, and then maybe your life changes forever.
But Vanco's been doing it for years.
Yes, but Yalla Habibi is what probably will change his life forever.
Versus, what was it? Is it Pula?
Yana
Pula.
Yes.
It was before COVID.
Yes.
There were videos of Black Coffee playing that in, I guess it goes to being, I mean, playing that overseas.
Yes.
And then, what's Mario? Is it Mario? The DJ from London?
Yeah, Mario, yes.
Yeah, Mario was also playing it.
Mm.
So is it connection as well, or is it the hit that helps get your music out?
Who plays your music also plays I mean, that cosign is a big deal.
Mm.
Black Coffee putting your song on his Spotify playlist, that's a big deal. That does a lot for you. Because for some people, if Black Coffee is playing it or listening to it, then it must be good. And people will go, hopefully again, down the rabbit hole of your music. You see, but the long and the short, though, is put your music out there and just keep pushing. You've got to push until something happens. You know, people look at Shimza and they think, Shimza's connected, he knows Comrade. Shimza has been pushing since he was 15.
Yeah.
I met Shimza when he was 15 with dreadlocks. His work ethic at 15 surpassed many of the established guys already at the time. He was 15. But people look at Shimza and then they think he got lucky. Nah, dude, he's been putting in the work from day one. Shimza has been unrelenting since he was 15. But many will never learn from that because it's easier to go with the narrative of he was put on.
He was plugged
in. Or he's a comrade, or he knows people in. No, Shimza built from scratch, from zero. If anything, the comrades know him because he's inspiring. It's not that. If anything, it's the other way around. They benefit from his clout and being seen with him. Not the other way around. Shimza's a fucking hard worker. Yo, guys, if you're not inspired by Shimza's work, then nothing's going to inspire you. Nothing.
It's hard, though. Do you think the generation now works as hard as, I want to say, millennials and your era?
I think because the internet has made barrier to entry so much easier, a lot of people expect results fast. Or they think because, you know, a clip of mine trended or went viral or someone has seen dancing to it, then everything should start happening. You still need to put in the work. You still need to show up every day. You still need to clock your 10,000 hours.
Mm.
You still need to have a work ethic. Because if, for argument's sake, all of a sudden your things pop, but you have zero work ethic, then you're going to self-sabotage. You're going to take 10 bookings in one night, but only make it two or three. Because you don't have a work ethic. Because a work ethic comes with also understanding that this I can't do in one day. So maybe I should take less bookings. Because your work ethic allows you to operate at that level. Because you know your output. You know what you're able to do. So build your work ethic while you're building so that the day things pop for you, you are ready to work. Otherwise, you want to self-sabotage. You want to just tank your own career. Because now you're tardy, you're late, you're drunk when you show up at work, you don't respect the game, you don't respect anybody, you don't respect people who are part of the game. There are so many kids who have massive hits right now who are self-sabotaging. They're not showing up for gigs or double booking themselves. All of those little things add up. We're in an industry based on word of mouth.
Yeah.
And word of mouth also includes even the staff. Treat staff like shit at an establishment and you make it difficult for them to even say to the boss, when are you bringing that person back? Some of my gigs are based on staff asking the owner, when are you bringing this person back? Because he had time for us. And I'm not saying have time for the staff, but just greet people, man. Just don't be a puss.
I think it also comes, something I can say from my experience is...
We're running out of time, but carry on.
People actually carry themselves, and whether you're dealing with their office or themselves.
Yes.
Whether it's a WhatsApp or email or phone call.
Mm.
Actually,
yes.
We literally here because you want to make money or you benefit from this relationship.
Yes.
And how people communicate usually, for me, tells me a lot about them. And half the time is probably what blocks them from making money.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of it is also formal training at a corporate level. Because at a certain stage in your career, as you're getting more bookings or you're growing, you need to corporatize. And corporatize is not just setting up a company or having an official web presence, whether that's a website or whatever else you want to do, corporatizing. But your staff need to also understand the basics of corporate culture.
Mm.
If someone is trying to book the language you use, if you're following up on a booking, the language you use, everything adds up. If your manager is full of shit, I'm not coming back.
They don't see it.
Hmm?
It's sad that they don't see it. Like I know from OSHA bookings, right, where we've approached some DJs and someone will be like, yo, and I'm like, just the language they use, and I'm like,
this is training.
This is not chatting to your friend.
Yes.
Or they're like, why are you harassing me? And I'm like, I literally said, good day, I'd like to follow up.
It's a follow-up.
On the previous communication from like 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
I'm not harassing you.
Yes.
It's the same thing as like See Live took a screenshot where he was trying, I can't remember who he was trying to book. Mm. And just from the communication that those people had, he was like, I'm done. Like, yeah. I'm done with him.
Again, sometimes it's just that people don't know any better. You know what I mean? I might be brilliant at networking for you as your manager, but I think also take yourself to school and just learn the basics of, if we're corporatizing this artist, like, what are the do's and don'ts? I mean, Google is your friend. AI can even do the responses for you if for you are so-called or you don't know how to phrase things.
Mm.
Like the world is so much your oyster. There's no excuse anymore for tardiness, for being rude, for not even responding to clients if someone is trying to book your artist. Because there's a day it'll all dry up. And then you'll start remembering the ones that you thought, it's fine then.
They're just coming at you.
Wang harasa. The time you're responding, I mean, you're following up on a two-week-old inquiry.
That's sad to see.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And unfortunately, because you deal with a lot of our OSHIP inquiries and bookings, you get to see it. Where there's someone who's supremely talented, but their management are dropping the ball.
Yeah.
And you also wonder, do they know that management operate at that level?
You don't even need a team. I think with you yourself, like, just, I know for a fact, maybe it's because we had the conversation that, yes, Gigilets or at the office, but at the end of the day, I'm representing the DJ Fresh brand.
Absolutely.
It's not just me. They're not here because of me. They're here because of you.
And one thing you need to have a conversation about with your team also is remind them that the extension of what you stand for and what you believe. So, for instance, if you don't treat people like shit, but your management do, they're an extension of who you are, and you need to remind them.
Mm.
But if you're full of shit and your management are full of shit, then hi, there's nothing we can do.
It's not going to help.
It's even Madlanga will be on some, this one I can't handle. So, yeah.
Our chat really became about DJing.
Yeah.
And then
and not about the DMs.
No, absolutely nothing. Well, most of them was like related, and I know people will be able to pick up gems from it. I wanted to go back, like, last few questions. You spoke about promoters and how they put you on the international guys or not.
Yes.
Local promoters, and I'm not painting everyone with a bad brush. Some are incredible to deal with.
Mm.
Some make you feel like, I remember when Lati was around quite often, he would say, and some communicate, oh my gosh, why am I struggling to communicate, to articulate? Some people would literally make you feel like they're doing you a favor because you're up and coming, even if you want to DJ for free.
Mm.
How do you build a relationship with promoters?
I think without being a nag, just remind them once in a while that I'm available to play an opening set. Show up to the event. Sometimes buy a ticket and show up to the event and just be in the picture and remind them, hi, I'm so-and-so. I got a ticket because I love the event. But if ever you need me to play an opening set. But you need to keep those conversations going. You need to always keep the door open that I'm available to play for free if that's what I need to do. Or if you need help with flyers, I'm available. If you need help with going to the municipal offices to get stickers so that I can put them on your street pole ads, I'm available for that. But avail yourself. And don't be a snob about what you're willing to do and not willing to do.
Mm.
Rather have your foot in the door than not. And the thing also with promoters in this country, and for instance, in, let's say, a Euro setup, the guy doing the event is not always the promoter. Sometimes the promoter is just the curator of the thing.
Yes.
You see. And we loosely use the word promoter to mean the guy putting the event together. But often it's like an executive producer and a director. So depending on the market you're in, the promoter sometimes is just the curator of the thing because they have those relationships that they can get so-and-so for a good price. Or they've got that relationship that every year you are part of this event. So the promoter is not always the guy with the money.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, speaking about money, what do you do when they don't pay you? I know what you do.
Mm.
I don't always agree with it.
Yeah.
But to the up-and-coming DJs who are dealing with promoters that don't follow through, man, on payments.
A DJ friend of mine took a venue to the small claims court because they did not pay him. And I think at small claims, as long as it's between 20 and 30, I think it's up to 30 now, you can take an establishment to, as long as you have a contract and proof, go to the small claims court. The sheriff will go attach equipment or whatever needs to be attached to pay you back if they don't pay you back. So don't be afraid to go to the courts. You don't need to necessarily have a high-powered lawyer to collect your money. As long as it's under 30,000 rand or is it 20,000 rand, small claims court are your friend. I saw a friend of mine do it with a venue owner.
When are we going?
There's one guy that owes us less than
There's three people.
Are you saying we should go to small claims court?
We can.
So yeah, get the ball rolling then. Let's do that.
Not even a joke. I'm
serious. No, I'm serious.
Get serious.
I think get the ball rolling. Let's do that.
I said we could blast them on social media, but you said no.
I don't like blasting people, man.
They must pay.
They must pay, but I don't like blasting people.
Okay.
They'll pay, they'll get their payment and their comeuppance or whatever it's called in other ways. What do we do about the other guy that owes us more than that?
I don't know. You say hi to him and you're so kind.
And I met him the other day when Bafana was playing and he just greeted me like he doesn't owe us money. I was so annoyed.
That's on you. Okay, I'm done asking questions.
I was so annoyed.
Because Khwasan Balla sometimes.
Okay, are we done?
Yes, we're done.
Did we even ask anything on the DMs?
No, I asked three. No? The rest was just follow-ups from conversation.
We're done only because we're out of time. Otherwise, we'd carry on. And then Botsang has been unwell for the last 2 weeks. He promises that he'll be back from next week to record Wow, What a Week Polytrix. So from myself and the team, thank you for your understanding. We are coming to you from Discover TV in Fourways, Johannesburg. Discover TV, let them be your stage. Shout out to Keletso Modisa Geng. She's our executive producer. And we are part of the Africa Podcast Network. You can email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works make us look good every single week. Remember what they say at Pezulu Works. If you look good, it's us. If you look bad, it's you.
You probably should have said, stay off camera like Cal.
Trevor, you're welcome. I think you must run with that. That we can't fix everything, but it's worth a try. No? Okay, I guess not. Until next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. Don't forget, you can catch us on Kaya 959 between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. For the Kaya breakfast, your fresh start.